Welcome to the Special Income for Life conference call. This is Rob Mitten, and I'm the founder of the Income for Life program for real estate investors. You can learn more about our Income for Life program at www.quitworksomeday.com, or if you're interested in becoming an Income for Life member for just $29.95 per month, you can apply for membership online at www.iflapplication.com. Today I have the privilege of interviewing Ruben Furtado. Ruben is one of our Income for Life members in Canada. Welcome to the call today, Ruben.
Well, thank you, Robin. The pleasure is all mine.
I know you're a busy guy, and I'm appreciative that you're taking time out of your schedule to talk with us. What part of Canada do you live in, Ruben?
Well, I live right out of the GTA, so the Greater Toronto Area.
Greater Toronto Area?
That's right, so that's in Ontario, and I just live in a suburb right outside of Toronto.
Toronto's a pretty cool town.
It is. It definitely, it's been, we've seen a lot of growth in the last couple of years, and especially the area that I live out, which is further west.
Are you investing close by there where you live, or are you traveling a bit to buy properties?
Actually, I'm lucky. There's been such a big growth spurt within the community that I live, which is out in Oakville, that there's a lot of new development. And how I got started in real estate was really, it was more by accident. I ended up buying a place in a new subdivision, and it was a small detached home with like a single car garage. It was at the time, I believe it was just under $200,000. And when we purchased this place, my family and I, and our goal was if we could have had that place paid for, we would have felt that we've met, you know, our ultimate goals. And in a very short period of time, we noticed that because the area is growing so much that there was a huge demand for homes in the area. And what we saw was the resale prices were surpassing that of what the builder prices were. So we saw that, hey, there's an opportunity to sell this place and make some money. And we did. And then that continued on. And we moved around like 12 times in the period of 6 years, so almost every 6 months. So that's how it all got started, but we figured there had to be an easier way.
Well, look, you've actually just given us a lot there. So the first house that you just described, did your family move into that home, or was it a rental property?
No, it was actually we moved in, and our intentions weren't to sell. It was basically we're looking for a place to live.
And enjoy life.
That's correct. And like I said, there was, I kind of wish back then when we realized that what the potential income was on that property or the return, we would have probably done something much larger and we would have had a much faster start. But our risk tolerance was really low then. And I think as time progressed, our risk tolerance continued to grow and we got into bigger and more expensive properties.
Okay, so you bought the home, and then as prices around you were escalating, opportunity knocked, so to speak, and you decided to just go ahead and sell and to move on, right, then?
That's correct.
Okay, so you said you moved, I was trying to make a note here, 12 times you moved?
Yeah, we moved about 12 times in 6 years. You know what? When I tell people that, they think, okay, so you never really fully unpacked. Everything is still in boxes, probably in the basement. And that's so untrue. Every time we moved in, originally we had the intention, okay, this would be the last house. So we always unpacked. And the nice thing, too, is because we had younger children, it was always within the same community. So they went to the same schools. And that was one of the benefits of what we were doing at that time. But I knew that wasn't going to last, and it didn't. So we then started looking for other ways that we can invest within real estate.
All right. Now, so I'm going to ask you just, this was not a real estate investing question, but what's your work background?
I have kind of a really diverse background. I mean, my work experience started when I was really young, work with my dad. He had a furniture retail store, and so we started working with my brother and I at the age of, 11, 12 years old. And even though we were in school, it was almost a full-time job. You know, you would come home from school and you were working until 1 o'clock in the morning. So we worked hard. We got our work ethic from my father. But we realized, I mean, he wanted me to take over the business, and I wasn't interested in working 8 days a week because it really was, that's all we did was work. Sorry, 7 days a week.
Well, I could understand what you're saying. I knew what you meant. with the retail business, man, you got to be there. There's no choice. So. Are you there, Ruben?
Yeah, I am.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I thought maybe I lost you. So you started in the furniture retail business, and then you know where did that take you?
And then from there, obviously, working in that business, my dad wanted me taking over, and he noticed that I wasn't really interested. There was a bit of a falling out. So then I kind of started off and trying to do my own thing. But I didn't have any real work experience working for a corporation. So when I started to actually get work, I mean, I ended up working, serving coffee at a local coffee shop, and then from there working and doing security work. And I was working for a particular property, doing some security work, and my context then of what my ultimate goal would be in terms of a career was I looked at, okay, who's the most senior person here, the most successful person, and it was a property manager. And so I started going towards that career, like I wanted to get into property management. But at the time, you know, especially within retail, they obviously operate on margins, so they typically are not known for giving really high salaries. I think the salary for the property manager was like $75,000 a year. And so without getting into a lot of detail, that's the career path I started going. But, you know what, I saw that there was a lot of challenges. It was going to take a while to get there. And then there was another opportunity that kind of surfaced around software sales. And there was a friend of mine who introduced me to that. And I made that transition. And it was a great opportunity for me because there was a lot of growth. And within software, there's huge margins. And then that's what I do now. I'm basically in software sales. I'm an account executive. I cover the Ontario government. So it's been very, very fruitful.
Okay. Wow. It sounds like it. You've learned. It almost sounds like you've learned something from every work experience, even starting, you know, back when you were 11 or 12 working for your father's business.
Absolutely.
Well, no. You had shared that your family moved 12 times in 6 years, and I think that probably, from my guess, because you and I have never talked before, but that probably got the money that you guys, or the profits you guys were probably taking every time you sold a home, got you a little bit excited about real estate, I would think. Is that correct?
Definitely. I remember every time we, you know, whether we were on a third or fourth home, our in-laws would say, you know what, that's enough. You guys have done well. Stop. And, you know, because everybody was always worried about the market slowing down, and we kept on going into bigger homes. So, yeah, well, we kind of got the bug, but at the same time, we also started figuring out, we made some mistakes along the way, and we figured out what we could do to mitigate some of the risk involved in doing it. Because as we were buying the properties, I wasn't buying it based on an expected appreciation over a period of a year or two. We were actually buying the property, looking at what the builder was selling it for compared to the same property in the resale market, and what it was selling for. And if we saw that there was a substantial difference, like, you know, 30, 40, and sometimes $80,000, close to $100,000 in the delta, then we said, hey, this is a pretty risk-free investment. The only thing is, when you're doing that, you need a lot of money because you're typically going into these homes. You don't want to be doing a high-ratio mortgage and paying mortgage insurance because that's going to cut into your profitability. So we had to start small to build up that kind of equity, and then eventually we started doing the larger homes.
Okay. Now, can I – so I get my one of the questions I had here in my notes to ask you was how did you get started investing in real estate? And it kind of sounds to me that your start in the investing aspect came from just the transitions for your family from home to home, and so your personal residence became an investment for you, which is different from most people, correct?
That is correct. Although my first exposure to real estate investing was when I was much younger, my father actually kind of by accident got into real estate investing, and he had a rental property. And what I mean by accident, he bought the house for our family, and we lived there. But then after when he purchased another home, he was unable to sell the house that we had in Toronto, and then he rented it out. and he rented it to a couple of students. And what ended up happening was, again, it wasn't a very positive experience. So I think we ended up renting it to like three students. And then one day we went back to, because the utility bills were just being, and we, it was all inclusive, utilities, property taxes, and the utility bills were getting really, really high. So we happened to stop by the property. And I'm not kidding, there was about 20 students living in the home. You know, every bedroom had like two or three bunk beds in them. And then even the basement was set up. It looked more like a shelter than it did a rental property. So, and then outside of that, there was another experience that we had where we had some out there, and there was difficulties in collecting rent, and it was even a family member, which makes worse. So I really stay away from any type of real estate investing where it required some sort of ongoing maintenance of a property that I didn't necessarily live in, whether it required some sort of rent. So, but like I said, so that's why I did the flips with my primary residence. But like I said, you only can do that for so long. You want to have some stability within your home life. So I figured, okay, what's the next thing?
Okay, well then, I guess that leads me to, you know, how did you get started with Income for Life? Because is that what was next for you then, was getting involved with Income for Life, or was there something else in between the flips and Income for Life?
Well, there wasn't. The very next thing was Income for Life. One of the things that I was interested in doing was getting more into developing, to turn around and start buying some properties. And I actually did one or two properties where I purchased them and fixed them up and then put them on the market immediately. And that was a lot of work. And I found that because it was so much work and I was still committed to my full-time job, it obviously had an impact on what I was doing at work and my ability to be more successful. So it was just a lot. I mean, when you're doing a flip where you're actually buying a place and renovating, again, it tied up a lot of our equity. And during that period, that, you know, I would say anywhere between 3 weeks to almost 2 months in some cases, it was almost like you had to be there on a daily basis to make sure that any of the, again, I didn't do the work myself, so we had contractors, but you had to be on top of them. And it was just, like I said, the outcome was great in terms of the money that we made, but the other thing too is one of the properties sat there for almost 6 months, and that just chewed up right into my profit. So
not only do you have to supervise the contractors, but you have the holding costs of that property until it's sold to a buyer that, you know, buys it through the traditional method. Then
exactly.
Well, you're lucky you weren't actually swinging the hammer yourself. A lot of investors that I talk to actually try to save the money. By save a lot of money in the whole process by doing the work themselves. So they're the ones, you know, they go to work till 6 at night and then they grab some fast food on the way over to their flip project, and they're then painting and, you know, ripping down walls and doing all that work at night and then on the weekend. So you're lucky that you actually avoided all of that yourself, but you still got the management.
I wish I could say I avoided all of it. I did a lot of a lot of the labor. Just, I remember, I'd be ripping up tiles type of thing and then cleaning up. So I did do a lot of the labor that I felt I could easily do without having an impact on the actual quality work. So, but like I said, after the last flip that we did, which was a couple months back, we were ecstatic when we sold the place, but we made a decision that moving forward, we're probably not going to do any more of those. Instead, what we want to do is focus on the rent homes, and we've been doing a couple of them out in the Hamilton area right now.
Okay, so you did your last flip, and now you switch gears to the rent-to-own strategy, which is what we talk a great deal about in Income for Life. And so how many Income for Life properties or rent-to-own properties have you acquired now?
So I'm in the process of finalizing the third one right now, which closes actually within a week. And the first two are out in the Hamilton area, and we just signed up a tenant buyer last week, and that was a phenomenal experience because not only did know, I get to do that pretty quickly, but my family was involved in that one. We got to share the experience and the success of getting that property done as quickly as we did.
Your family was involved in it. What do you mean by that?
So the previous property, I was pretty much the one individual that kind of went out, bought the property unseen, and that was because of the how comfortable I am with, you know, with Tom and Nick Harad at Income for Life here locally within the GTA. When we initially got the property, then I went out there to do a home inspection. Pretty much I was doing everything on my own. During the home inspection, I got to meet the vendors, and they were kind enough to allow us to show the home before we even took possession. I'll tell you a little bit more about that after if you're interested.
Vendors is a seller here in the States, just to clarify. Is that correct? When you say vendors, you mean the sellers, right?
That's correct. So okay. We got to meet with the seller during the home inspection. But the entire process all the way through to actually doing the advertising, calling up on the leads, establishing the showings, and then signing the final deal was something that I did from start to finish on my own. Since we were successful on that one, the second one I wanted to get my family a little bit more involved. And so again, it was also still a sight unseen. The lead came through in the hot list, and I was out in Vancouver, and I said, listen, I'm interested in this property. Let's put an offer. But when we finally took possession of the property, I think we closed on a Thursday, and we were Saturday, like 3 days later, I brought the family out just to come look at the property for the first time and also to clean it and probably just kind of change it cosmetically by lighting up some candles and some decor and stuff like that. Nothing really too fancy, but just to give it a bit more of an emotional appeal.
Well, that's smart.
So we got there, and I'll tell you, we walked in through the door, and I was hoping everything would be super clean. So, because this is again my first exposure, or my family's first exposure to the home. Really. We get there, and it wasn't what we necessarily expected. But you know what? 6 hours of being there, us working together, cleaning up the place. I mean, it wasn't destroyed or anything like that. It was left pretty dirty. I mean, there was rotten food in the fridge, but nothing that a little spick and span wouldn't clean, right? So during that period, though, I had set up some showings for, like, I was expecting that it was only going to take about an hour or so to clean. But we were all there cleaning, and so people started coming through. And during that process, we found a really nice young family that came in, and they loved the place. And immediately, you know, they expressed an interest. They said they were just going to step out, have a coffee, think about it. And they came back, and then we signed them up on an agreement, on a rent-to-own agreement. And you know, when we left the house, we didn't even have to put up a sign in front of the house. We were just that, it was that easy, and they were involved. So their buy-in to what I was already doing was great, because now they felt that they were part of it and they wanted to move forward. They wanted to do it. So my son, who's only 14 years old, you know, when we're going up to Hamilton, he's like, he wants to come with me because he wants to be the guy to figure out, you know, what's the next property we're going to get, so you can get, you know, take that type of credit for it.
That's incredible. That's fantastic, getting your family involved. When I first started investing, and you know, my vision was, hey, I'm going to cut all the deals, and my wife, you know, helps get the property spruced up, and she handles all the bookkeeping and everything, and she has no interest in doing any of that. So it kind of fell on my shoulders. And now I have, you know, two daughters, and my older daughter will come with me sometimes on showings and same thing. So that's great that you're getting them involved. But I'm curious. So you're there cleaning this property, and you said you didn't even put a sign in. How did you attract, you know, prospective tenant buyers to your property? Did you have them from a previous property, or had an ad in the paper, or what'd you do?
So when I... On this particular house, when we purchased it, when we went to go do the home inspection, again, I got to meet with the seller. I made an agreement with the seller that you know, that I'd like to advertise his home. So off the here locally, what we have is the MLS listing, which is basically a listing with all the information when the house is being offered for sale.
Right.
There were some pictures there and everything like that. So I asked him if he would mind if I used some of those pictures, because they are personal, that they do have his furniture. And the house looks so much better when it's obviously furnished, if it's done nicely, of course. So he said, yeah, go ahead. So I actually showed the property on two previous occasions while he was still living in the home. And I kind of made a deal with him, which is I would actually give him $75 for every time he allowed me to show the home. And in the, if I were to, as a result of that showing, if I were to actually turn around and sign up a tenant buyer, at that point I would give him a total of $500. So I said, listen, you're helping me out. I want an opportunity to make it worth your while. And he agreed. So I had showed the house on two prior occasions. And when I was doing a showing, it wasn't just the one person. I'd get a couple people out. I'd make like four appointments, of which only two or three people would show up. But why that was important was that if I hadn't done those two previous showings, and that day that I was there cleaning with my family, and then we actually turned around and signed somebody up, I would have probably held off and tried to get maybe a larger down payment or maybe more monthly rental income. But I think what happened is I realized, of the, you know, the first set of, I think it would have been like six families or individuals that had come by, and them not acting on it, that I was really comfortable, like, yeah, this is a pretty good deal. You know what, let's not be too greedy. So that Saturday that we were cleaning, it was just, it was kind of priced up. Everything just worked out really well. And I'm like, yeah, I'm comfortable with this. I'm comfortable with the individuals. And we made a commitment to them, and they made a commitment to us.
And so you had, you know, you had an upfront payment and rent coming in on that property well before your first mortgage payment was due, it sounds like. Is that correct?
Yeah, I would, that's correct. So that is correct. So the goal was to turn around and before the first mortgage payment was coming in, that we already had the tenant locked up and we already had a sufficient down payment. So, again, these people haven't moved in yet. They've already given me a significant down payment, and they continue. So we actually broke up the down payment over a period of over a couple of weeks, so that by the time they moved in, we already had the full down payment. And like I said, it was a huge difference from whatever I was used to, because like if you look on the flip, I would buy a house for $500,000. Just actually, if I give you some actual numbers, it was like $430,000. Of which I was putting 20% down on. And then on top of that, I was spending about $35,000 on a renovation. And then I had to kit it for almost 6 months, which was another $3,000 a month to carry this type of property, the mortgage, the insurance, and the property taxes. So at the end of the day, I was out like, I think when we figured it out, it was like about $120,000.
Out of pocket.
On an investment. Yeah, and I probably made on that property maybe $20,000, right? So I had to carry it for 6 months. I had to invest a lot of time, as opposed to this rental, the rent-owned property that I was just talking about earlier, is literally bought it sight unseen, never been there. The first time I was there was a home inspection, an hour of my time. And then I went back for two additional showings, which probably accumulated maybe another 2-3 hours. And then the very last time I was there was the time where we were cleaning it. And it was like 6 hours of my family's time, which we were together. And you know what? On that property, I ended up buying it for, it was $229,000, where they paid my closing costs. And on the rent to own, the 2-year buyout was $270,000, and they were getting $10,000 in credit. So we ended up making on that property more, about 120% more than what I did on the flip. And of my money, there's about, after the down payment that I received and after the first and last month's rent, there's about $4,000 of my money in that home. So
wow.
It was a huge wake-up call. And, you know, it's nice dealing in big executive-type homes because there's a sense of kind of ego or pride. And some of these rent-to-own homes, the one that we did on the Hamilton Elm, this one that I was just referring to, it was a beautiful house, right? But sometimes, you know, it wasn't like if I brought my wife out to it the first time, she would not think it's a phenomenal place. But I said, listen, this is a great house and there's a big market for it. So, and I think she got it by seeing that and being involved in that process.
Wow. What you just shared with us is so big. I was taking notes. So in your flip deal, you would be putting about $100,000 of your own money or equity into play. So that's at risk, so to speak. and you would, and I, and in that one scenario, you generated about a 20% return on that $100,000. And then in the rent to own, all said and done, you've got $4,000 invested, and you have 120% return. Is that true?
That is correct.
Wow.
That is correct.
And then
the other thing too is, if you look at the flip, it was a lot more risky, because what I was doing on the flip is I was doing, when I purchased the house and what I did to it, it was to create it, to make it different than the other properties. As a result of that, I was basically asking a lot more than what the market value was in that area. I knew I was confident that I was going to get it, but there was a lot of risk, because I was setting precedent in an existing neighborhood where the existing house is there. The most expensive house that was sold in the area was like $490,000, and I was asking $540,000 initially, and I dropped it to $530,000. So, I mean, I had agents coming into the house to look at the house and telling me that, you know what, anybody who would buy it over $500,000 would have to be crazy. Fortunately, we still sold it over that price point, but it was a lot more risky because we were trying to create a new precedent in that area.
Well, you know, when your market's rising, and I know your market's still going super strong there, you can get away with that stuff. But if your market starts to slow down, like it has here in the States, you end up getting kind of caught in a little bit of a problem, because you'll be in trouble in a situation like that. So you're lucky that you got in and got out pretty quickly. And so be thankful for that, because there's some folks here.
And the key difference is, if it slows down here, I don't have any income coming off that property.
That's true.
That's why it's really risky, as opposed to the rent to own. Even if it slows down, the rent that I'm collecting in our case is actually more than compensating for what the total cost of the property is. And in some cases, I have positive cash flow. Like on the very first property we did, I have $400 positive cash flow after we pay all expenses, right? So it's because we picked it up for a great price. I got somebody in there that had really good income and wanted to build up a larger down payment, so the payments were much higher than what the market rent is in the area. And as a result, I have positive cash flow, which is great, because I didn't have positive cash flow on the rental, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's negative cash flow until you sell it.
So
you kind of shared with us your experiences of showing that second property, if I'm getting them correctly. You kind of alluded to maybe a funny story on the first one. Is there a funny story showing or working with the seller on the first house?
So on the first place, I wanted to do the same thing. So I learned through my mistakes. We'll start off by saying that. So as soon as I turned around and put an offer to purchase the house and went through the home inspection, as we firmed up on the offer, I had about two months before I took ownership. And then I was also going away with the family to Italy we went just shy of a month to Italy. So the house was actually closing while we were away. So we weren't even here. So I bought the house unseen and closed on it without us even being in the country. So what I wanted to do, though, was to turn around and see if I can get a tenant in the property, or at least not in the property, but at least signed up, so that when I took possession, we had somebody ready to go. So I took some of the photos that were off of MLS, and I turned around and I started advertising the house on some of a free classified ad. Like, I think in the States they have Craigslist.
Yep.
It's something very similar to Craigslist. Here it's called Kijiji. I also think they have it in the States, but it's probably not as popular. But
okay.
It's very popular here. So I threw some photos, and I made the mistake of putting the address on the ad. So, and I never told the owner, because it never crossed my mind. So what ended up happening, yeah, by the way, the owner already knew that I was going to do a rent to own on it, and they already agreed to allow me to show the property to another family. But they never knew that I had an ad on Kijiji with their address, with pictures of their little kids' room. So what ended up happening, and they had, and you know what, the nicest family in the world, a very young couple with, I think, a child that was probably 1 or 2 years old. So what ended up happening is somebody obviously took the address, drove by it, and rang the doorbell and said, listen, I'm here to see the house. And they're like, well, I'm sorry, I have no idea what you're talking about. She goes, it must be your house, because you're the one that has, like, the little crib with the, you know, in the kids' room with the crib and the green and brown paint. And so, obviously, the owners were freaked out. They were concerned, like, what are you talking about? So they called up my agent, and they were livid. And then, obviously, it got back to me, and I'm like, oh, my God, you know what? It was not malicious. I didn't mean to. So I automatically, so there was some email communication going back and forth between myself and the seller. And I right away, I took the ad off, and I apologized, and I told them that, you know what, I didn't want to do anything that would make them feel uncomfortable. But through that whole process of communicating with them, the net of it was they came back and they said, listen, we understand what you're trying to do. Hey, continue to advertise the house. You can even put a sign on our front lawn. But you know what? Remove the address and remove the pictures from the inside. And I said, listen, you know what? I appreciate the offer. But by this point, we were getting really close to leaving away for our vacation. And I said, I appreciate the offer, but you know what? I feel terrible, and I'm going to refrain from doing any of that. I'll wait till I take ownership. So the next time around, that's when I asked permission. I told them exactly what I was doing, and I didn't include an address.
Well, that's lessons learned, but that's the power of your marketing, huh? So it doesn't sound like you guys are having any problems at all attracting tenant buyers to your rent-to-own homes then.
You know what? Absolutely not. There's a couple different other ways that we'll do it. There's the Hamilton Spectator. For me, which is a local newspaper, we'll do the classified ads. And we're always trying to change things up on what's on it. That hasn't been as effective for me personally. I think part of it is my own fault. I don't run the ad long enough.
Okay.
And what I find, too, is because you don't want to limit the amount of leads that you get in or disqualify somebody, so you don't put a price point. You just put kind of a little bit of a description of the house and the fact that it's a rent-to-own. And then we have that 24-hour message that actually qualifies it further and gets a person to leave a message saying how much they have to put down. But where I've been getting probably more leads and a bit more qualified because there's more information is on, like I said, this online classified ad with Kijiji.
Okay, so that's working very well for you then.
It is. What I also found, too, is when we first started this going back August of last year, that there wasn't a lot of rent-to-own on the market. And there still isn't a lot, but through Income for Life, I mean, you're starting to see a lot of people do more of it. So now when I post an ad, I'm not the only rent-to-own anymore. There's a couple of them, which is fine because the market's big enough. But that's one thing that I'm seeing that's a little bit different. And the funny thing is when I had a showing and somebody's giving me an offer, right, I'm like, well, I'm going to hold off. And then if I try calling that person back, I find out, no, we just did another rent-to-own with somebody else. So it's getting a bit more competitive, but like I said, you just got to turn around and obviously make sure that you have a good product, a good home that you're offering, and it's fair, and that's and there's still a huge opportunity to make money.
Yeah, your points are well taken. A question I have for you here is, and you know, since you've been through a lot with your flipping, and now your rent-to-own and Income for Life type properties. What would you say your investing goals are going forward?
Well, it's pretty. See, when we were doing the initial property, and the fact that we were away on holidays for almost a month, so that property took a little bit longer to get somebody in there. You know, wife was probably getting a bit discouraged. She's like, "Well, you know, is this what we want to do, or do we want to look at something else?" And then when you look at the profitability, like if we're making about $20,000 on the property, and on this one we're making $400 cash flow, that one seemed like it was a lot of work for the type of returns that we were used to seeing. Because when we were doing flips, we were like in some cases, especially the primary residence, we're making $100,000, right? So it was hard to change your thought pattern around investing. But then when I told her, and this is what my goal was, I said, Lori, I said, what I'd like to do is I'd like to get 10 houses within a period of a year. And if we have 10 houses, and if you factor in that, you know, after 2 years that these 10 houses are selling, and you're making on average $20,000 to $30,000 a house, that's $200,000 to $300,000 in income, right? So I said, it's not about the one house. It's about looking at the bigger picture. So my goal is 10 houses.
Ten houses.
Within a period of 10 years. So I broke it down to a 10, a maximum of 10, a minimum of 6. And we're already, like, again, we've just started, and we're already on our third. So I'm pretty confident that we're going to at least meet the minimum and, again, really push for going for 10.
Well, congratulations on your fast start. And, you know, so many people talk about, you know, hey, I want to start investing in real estate, but they never actually do it. And so, like, when we see someone that starts and, you know, makes a few mistakes and learns from those mistakes and then, you know, compounds that knowledge on the second and third property, each one will get a little bit easier for you. It's pretty inspiring. So that's great. Just a general question for you is, how would you say and the Income for Life membership has helped you in the process?
It has been what the best way to describe it. It's been an enabler for me. I would have never knew that there was a market existed. Actually, I'll even be more specific. I remember when I was talking to Tom, and I'm like, you know what? Why would somebody give you money up front if they could turn around and just rent the place out? But, like, there was a lot of those kinds of questions. I wasn't a believer.
Why would a tenant buyer give you, you know, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Especially if it's a home when they'd be renting. And then if they had that $5,000, $6,000, why are they not buying a house?
Yeah,
right?
That's a common question. Yeah.
So, and, you know, when I tell people, that's what they're asking. I'm like, it's funny you should say that because I ask myself the same questions, right? And then there's always the, oh, what if they don't pay you rent? And then there was all these things. But you know what? In working with Income for Life, working with Tom, they addressed those questions. And you know what? They had and they had concrete examples of where it was working. So, you know, I won't say I was one of the early adopters. I kind of waited a bit on the sidelines and watched people do it. And I wish I didn't, because if I did it sooner, right, there was a little less competition, and I would have had more properties by now, and I would have been much closer to my goal. So, but regardless of the fact, that is really Income for Life has helped me. One, they're the ones that are finding two properties on the team. Right. And based on the trust and confidence that I have on Tom and Nick to find these properties, and also within handling the whole process and providing the training on how to get prospects out to the property, you know, my biggest problem is I talk too much and I give out too much information. And, you know, Tom and Nick have been great coaches. They're like, listen, when you're talking to somebody on the phone, they want to know about how the program works. This is what you tell them. And it's like textbook, and I go by it all the time, and it works because, you know, if I try to divert from that a little bit, it's a trial and error, but you know what, I'm just going to stick to what works, and they have obviously got tons of experience with a lot of other members, so I'm not going to try to be the Lone Ranger and do something different.
Well, it's, you know, everything that we have and, you know, we learn in Income for Life is from trial and error, so, you know, it all kind of started from me trying one thing and then it worked, and then, you know, adding to it and learning from it, and then having other members do different things. And so we now really have a good idea of what works and what doesn't work. And you're right, when you veer off course and don't follow the actual strategy, the results go down. And so some things might seem stupid or dumb and not to make sense, but they work, and that's really the bottom line, is just paying attention to what works.
You know, I was just going to say, a lot of the strategies that I've learned from Income for Life also apply to just anything in general. And I'll be more specific, like my sister-in-law was trying to sell her vehicle, right, a used vehicle, so we put an ad on the classified. Exactly the same way that we market the homes, we marketed the vehicle. You know, we put some information there, but when we were showing the vehicle, we never showed it to just one person. We'd set up appointments where there was like 3-4 people at the same time to create that auction-type atmosphere.
Yeah.
And the car sold like that. So, like, the stuff that we're learning there is could be applied in many different aspects of business. So it's been, for me, like I said, a huge enabler.
Well, thank you. And I know we're running short on time. Can I ask you guys maybe one final question? And I try to ask this question all the time. But what advice would you give someone who was maybe just starting out with real estate or not sure what to do, since you've been, you've flipped homes and you've done this, and with all your experiences, what advice would you give someone?
You know what? It's just fun you should ask me that, because there's a lot of people, obviously friends and family, who kind of seen what we've done, it's part of my personality. I want to help people out, so I'm always telling them about what I'm doing and why they should get involved. So my advice to them is, you don't need a lot of money to get started, because that's their biggest concern or objection. And I said, you know what, there's risk in anything you do. However, here's something that has limited risk because of the way the program's set up. So it just comes down to one thing. You know what? Just take action, do it. And if you have questions, ask the questions. Don't just say, well, you know what, I don't know about it, and walk away. But and the best way is start really small, right? What I mean by start small is like in terms of an action, which is whether it's calling, Income for Life and signing up, and then getting them, like, immediately after to come out and look at a couple of different properties, not only properties that are available on the market, but also take you drive by some properties where, they were actually successful rent-to-own programs that they just completed, because that's going to help build their confidence. So that would be my advice to them.
All right, so I took some notes. You said take action, which I think is kind of the key to anything. No matter what you're doing, but take action, do something, start small, and then you said to go out and look at homes, both homes that are potentially available to invest in and homes that have been already done, where an investor's purchased them and put a tenant buyer in them. And I guess I would say that's more of an education part of the process then. So I think that's great advice, and I'm grateful for your time, and I'm excited to have you in the membership. And that's a great story about putting the address in the ad. And I'll be sure to make sure that I don't make that mistake. you guys are way ahead of me, because when I first started investing, I never even thought of marketing a property before I had ownership of it. The old way I did it was, I'd buy it and then title would transfer into my name, and then I would start to promote the property. You guys get 3 or 4 week jump on the process. I never had that, so good for you.
So we actually, that part of it, we've been perfecting a little bit more, because now what we do is we even set up a more formal program where as soon as the property, the offer firms up, then I approach the seller, and I now have it so that I actually offer them $100 to put out a sign in front of their house, and I tell them what the sign is going to say, so there's no surprises. And then I follow up that offer by saying that I'd give them $45 per showing, and I also say that I'm only going to do a maximum of 3 showings. But in each of those showings, there may be 3 to 4 different sets of people that come during that one showing. So that what that gives me is between 9 or 12 people that I get to show the house to before I take possession of it. And again, anybody else can do anything differently if they want. But what that means is, they're only going to be inconvenienced 3 times. Every time they are somewhat inconvenienced, they get $75. The $100 for the sign, no one's ever objected to that. They have no. Sometimes they say, just go ahead and put the sign. Don't worry about the $100, right? And then the last thing is, then I say, if as a result of one of those showings, we do get a contract sign, then I'd give them up to a maximum. So all inclusive would be $500. And it's amazing. They like it. They appreciate it. And then sometimes, like the last house I just purchased, they're like, you know what? One of them actually wanted to include, and this is a good point. One of them said, you know what? How about you do this? Because this is where I screwed up. I started telling them that while we were negotiating an offer, and they're like, you know what? Just give me an extra $500 on top of the purchase price, and you can do whatever you want. And I thought, okay, in good faith, I'll do that. However, you know what? Now every time I show the home, I feel that he's doing me a favor. And he is in either way, but it still feels like I owe him something. So now when I'm doing the show and I'm bringing by a bottle of wine or something for them, just for appreciation, as opposed to the other way around, it's more like, quid pro quo as we go along. Whatever, he's doing something for me, I'm doing something for them.
Well, I mean, you're
so starting,
not,
getting too many details around that.
No, this is really, this is good stuff. And I mean, I wish I knew this when I started. And I mean, what you're doing is you're creating a win-win situation with the seller. And what we try to do in Income for Life is create a win-win situation with our tenant buyer. And you're doing it now with the seller, which I think is super smart. Question for you, though. When you're showing the home, is the seller typically there, or the vendor, as you call it? Are they home, or do they leave for you?
Generally, they leave. Where I actually interact with the seller is typically during the home inspection.
Okay.
So in some cases, though, where depending on how the offer is going back and forth and how it's being negotiated, then there is some communication that happens between, obviously, the seller and myself.
So when you're showing when you're showing the home to the prospective tenant buyers, then they're not in the home.
I understand the question now. Yes, when I am showing the home, the seller is there, and normally they're off in another room, someplace else. So if I start negotiating or talking numbers, like on a property, if the seller is home, he's probably upstairs, and I'm somewhere in the basement, or I'm in another room, because I absolutely want him to know what I'm selling the house for after 2 years, because then he'll feel that he didn't get enough for his home.
I was wondering how that went. So they haven't. Do the renters start asking the seller questions or no?
No, you know why? Because what I do is, as the renters are going through, I bring them all that pretty much down into one area of the prop, like in the home, and then that's where I just kind of generally take them through the numbers on the property, and then after, if they're interested, then we kind of pull off and we'll go to more of a private area. So
okay.
It's not been an issue. And now that's in the winter. In the summer, it's a little bit different. You know, you can go outside, have a conversation by the car.
Yeah, no, I definitely, it is a big difference, yeah. Well, like I said, it's been a fantastic interview. I've actually been taking notes as we've talked, and I've learned from you. So thanks so much for your time. I really do appreciate it.
No problem.
And so once again, if you're listening in, you can request additional information about Income for Life by visiting www.quitworksomeday.com, or you can apply for membership online. It costs $29.95 a month, and you can apply online at www.ifl, which is abbreviated for Income for Life, iflapplication.com.